What? She remembered their conversation on the balcony and frowned. So much for swapping stories. The test is tomorrow, and I need to train. I think you've had enough training for today. It's almost dinner. Your lesson with Brello ended 2 hours ago. Get some rest, or you'll be useless tomorrow. And no, I don't know what the test will be, so don't bother asking. That's absurd, she cried, and a pinch from Kaol kept her voice down. Princess Nehemia cast a worried glance in Selena's direction, but the assassin waved to her to resume her lesson with the crown prince. I'm not going to do anything, you insufferable moron. Are you honestly so blind that you can't see why we can't allow this? Can't allow? You're just afraid of me. Don't flatter yourself. You think I want to go back to Endovir? She hissed. You think I'm not aware of the fact that if I flee, I'll be hunted down for the rest of my life? You think I don't know why I vomit when you and I run in the morning? My body is a wreck. I need to spend these extra hours here, and you shouldn't punish me for it. I'm not going to pretend to know how a criminal mind works. She threw her hands in the air. You know, I actually felt guilty, just a little guilty, and now I remember why I shouldn't have. I hate sitting around, locked in my room, bored out of my senses. I hate all these guards and nonsense. I hate you telling me to hold back when Brello sings Kane's praises, and I'm just there boring and unnoticed in the middle. I hate being told what I can't do, and I hate you most of all. He tapped his foot on the ground. Are you finished? There was no kindness in Kaol's face, and she clicked her tongue as she left, her fists aching to bash his teeth down his throat. Chapter 19 Sitting in a chair near the hearth of the Great Hall, Caltaine watched Duke Parrington converse with Queen Georgina atop her dais. It had been a shame that Dorian had left so quickly an hour ago. She hadn't even had the chance to speak to him, which was especially irksome, given that she'd spent the better part of the morning dressing for court. Her raven black hair was neatly coiled around her head, and her skin glowed golden from the subtle shimmering powders she'd dusted on her face. Though the bindings on her pink and yellow gown crushed her ribs, and the pearls and diamonds around her neck strangled her, she kept her chin high, poised. Dorian had left, but having Parrington show up was an unexpected surprise. The Duke rarely visited court. This had to be important. Caltaine rose from her chair by the fire as the Duke bowed to the Queen and strode toward the doors. As she stepped into his path, he paused at the sight of her, his eyes gleaming with a hunger that made her want to cringe. He bowed low. "Milady?"
"Your Grace," she smiled,
forcing all that repulsion down deep, deep, deep.
"I hope you're well,"
he said, offering his arm to lead her out of the hall. She smiled again, taking it. Though he was somewhat rotund, hard muscle lay in the arm beneath her hand.
"Very well, thank you. And yourself? I feel I haven't seen you in days and days. What a wonderful surprise to have you visit the court."
Parrington gave her a yellow smile.
"I've missed you as well, milady."
She tried not to wince as his hairy, meaty fingers rubbed her pristine skin, and instead delicately inclined her head toward him.
"I hope Her Majesty was in good health. Was your conversation a pleasant one?"
Oh, it was so dangerous to pry, especially when she was here on his good graces. Meeting him last spring had been a stroke of luck, and convincing him to invite her to court, mostly by implying what might await him once she was out of her father's household and without a chaperone, hadn't been that difficult. But she wasn't here to simply enjoy the pleasures of the court. No. She was tired of being a minor lady, waiting to be married off to the highest bidder, tired of petty politics and easily manipulated fools.
"Her Majesty is quite well, actually," Parrington said,
leading Caltaine toward her rooms. Her stomach clenched a bit. Though he didn't hide that he wanted her, he hadn't pushed her into bed yet. But with a man like Parrington, who always got what he wanted, she didn't have much time to find a way to avoid owning up to the subtle promise she'd made him earlier that year.
"But the Duke went on. With a son of marriageable age, she's busy.
Caltaine kept her face plain, calm, serene. Can we expect any news of an engagement in the near future?
Another dangerous question.
I certainly hope so,
the Duke grumbled, his face darkening beneath his ruddy hair. The jagged scar along his cheek stood out starkly.
Her Majesty already has a list of girls deemed appropriate.
The Duke halted, remembering whom he spoke to, and Caltaine batted her eyelashes at him.
Oh, I'm quite sorry, she purred. I didn't mean to pry into the royal household's affairs.
She patted his arm, her heart kicking into a full gallop. Dorian had been given a list of appropriate brides. Who was on it? And how could she... No, she'd think of that later. For now, she had to find out who stood between her and the crown.
It's nothing to apologize for,
he said, his dark eyes shining.
Come, tell me what you've been doing these past few days.
Not much of note, though I met a very interesting young woman, she said casually, leading him down a window-lined stairway into the glass section of the castle. A friend of Dorian's, the Lady Lillian, he called her.
The Duke went positively rigid.
You met her?
Oh, yes. She's quite kind.
The lie rolled off of her tongue.
When I spoke to her today, she mentioned how much the Crown Prince likes her. I hope for her sake she was on the Queen's list.
While she'd wanted some information about Lillian, she hadn't expected this.
The Lady Lillian? Of course she isn't.
The poor thing. I suspect her heart will be broken. I know it's not my place to pry, she went on,
the Duke growing redder and more furious by the moment.
But I heard it not an hour ago from Dorian himself that...
That what?
A thrill went through her at his anger. Not anger at her, but at Lillian. At the weapon she'd just had the good fortune to stumble across.
That he's very attracted to her, possibly in love with her.
That's absurd.
It's true.
She gave a morose shake of the head.
How tragic.
Foolish is what it is.
The Duke stopped at the end of the hallway that led to Caltaine's room. His anger loosened his tongue.
Foolish and daft and impossible.
Impossible?
Someday I will explain why.
A clock chimed, off kilter, and Parrington turned in its direction.
I have a council meeting.
He leaned close enough to whisper in her ear, his breath hot and damp against her skin.
Perhaps I'll see you tonight.
He dragged a hand down her side before he walked away. She watched him go, and when he disappeared, she let out a shuddering sigh. But if he could get her close to Dorian... She had to find out who her competition was, but first she had to find a way to get Lillian's claws out of the prince. List or no list, she was a threat. And if the Duke hated her as much as it seemed, she might have powerful allies when the time came to make sure Lillian released her hold on Dorian. Dorian and Kaol didn't say much as they walked to dinner in the Great Hall. Princess Nehemia was safely in her chambers, surrounded by her guards. It had been quickly agreed that while it was foolish of Selena to spar with the princess, Kaol's absence was inexcusable, even with the dead champion to investigate.
You seemed rather friendly with Sardothian, Kaol said, his voice cold. Jealous, are we?
Dorian teased.
I'm more concerned for your safety. She might be pretty and might impress you with her cleverness, but she's still an assassin, Dorian.
You sound like my father.
It's common sense. Stay away from her, champion or no.
Don't give me orders.
I'm only doing it for your safety.
Why would she kill me? I think she likes being pampered. If she hasn't attempted to escape or kill anyone, then why would she do it now? He patted his friend on the shoulder. You worry too much.
It's my occupation to worry.
Then you'll have gray hair before you're 25, and Sardothian certainly will not fall in love with you.
What nonsense are you talking? Well, if she does try to escape, which she won't, then she'll break your heart. You'd be forced to throw her in the dungeons, hunt her down, or kill her.
Dorian, I don't like her.
Sensing his friend's growing irritation, Dorian changed the subject. What about that dead champion, the Eye Eater? Any idea yet who did it or why?
Kaol's eyes darkened. I've studied it again and again over the past few days. The body was totally destroyed.
The color leached from Kaol's cheeks.
Innards scooped out and gone. Even the brain was missing.
I've sent a message to your father about it, but I'll continue investigating in the meantime. I bet it was just a drunken brawl, Dorian said, though he had been in plenty of brawls himself and had never known anyone to go about removing someone's innards. A trickle of fear formed in the back of Dorian's mind. My father will probably be glad to have the Eye Eater dead and gone.
I hope so.
Dorian grinned and put an arm around the captain's shoulders. With you looking into it, I'm sure it'll be solved tomorrow, he said, leading his friend into the dining hall. Chapter 20 Selena closed her book and sighed. What a terrible ending. She stood from the chair, unsure where she was going, and walked out of her bedroom. She'd been willing to apologize to Kaol when he found her sparring with Nehemia that afternoon. But his behavior... She paced through her rooms. He had more important things to do than guard the world's most famous criminal, did he? She didn't enjoy being cruel, but... Hadn't he deserved it? She'd really made a fool out of herself by mentioning the vomiting, and she'd called him all sorts of nasty things. Did he trust her or hate her? Selena looked at her hands and realized she had wrung them so badly that her fingers were red. How had she gone from the most feared prisoner in Endovir to this sappy mess? She had greater matters to worry about, like the test tomorrow, and this dead champion. She'd already altered the hinges on all her doors so that they squealed loudly any time they opened. If someone entered her room, she'd know well in advance. And she'd managed to embed some stolen sewing needles into a bar of soap for a makeshift miniature pike. It was better than nothing, especially if this murderer had a taste for champion blood. She forced her hands to her sides, shaking her unease, and strode into the music and gaming room. She could not play billiards or cards by herself, but... Selena eyed the pianoforte. She used to play. Oh, she loved to play. Loved music, the way music could break and heal and make everything seem possible and heroic. Carefully, as if approaching a sleeping person, Selena walked to the large instrument. She pulled out the wooden bench, wincing at the loud scraping sound it made. Folding back the heavy lid, she pushed her feet on the pedals, testing them. She eyed the smooth ivory keys, and then the black keys, which were like the gaps between teeth. She had been good once, perhaps better than good. Arobin Hommel made her play for him whenever they saw each other. She wondered if Arobin knew she was out of the mines. Would he try to free her if he did? She still didn't dare to face the possibility of who might have betrayed her. Things had been such a haze when she'd been captured. In 2 weeks, she'd lost Sam and her own freedom, and lost something of herself in those blurry days, too. Sam. What would he make of all this? If he'd been alive when she was captured, he would have had her out of the royal dungeons before the king even got word of her imprisonment. But Sam, like her, had been betrayed. And sometimes the absence of him hit her so hard that she forgot how to breathe. She touched a lower note. It was deep and throbbing, full of sorrow and anger. Gingerly, with one hand, she tapped out a simple, slow melody on the higher keys. Echoes, shreds of memories arising out of the void of her mind. Her rooms were so silent that the music seemed obtrusive. She moved her right hand, playing upon the flats and sharps.
It was a piece that she used to play again and again until Aerobin would yell at her to play something else. She played a chord, then another, added in a few silver notes from her right hand, pushed once on a pedal, and was gone. The notes burst from her fingers, staggering at first, but then more confidently as the emotion in the music took over. It was a mournful piece, but it made her into something clean and new. She was surprised that her hands had not forgotten, that somewhere in her mind, after a year of darkness and slavery, music was still alive and breathing. That somewhere, between the notes, was Sam. She forgot about time as she drifted between pieces, voicing the unspeakable, opening old wounds, playing and playing as the sound forgave and saved her. Leaning against the doorway, Dorian stood, utterly transfixed. She'd been playing for some time with her back to him. He wondered when she'd notice him, or if she'd ever stop at all. He wouldn't mind listening forever. He had come here with the intention of embarrassing a snide assassin, and had instead found a young woman pouring her secrets into a piano forte. Dorian peeled himself from the wall. For all her assassinating experience, she didn't notice him until he sat down on the bench beside her. "You play her fingers slipped on the keys, which let out a loud, awful clank, and she was halfway to the rack of cue sticks when she beheld him. He could have sworn her eyes were damp. "What are you doing here?" She glanced to the door. Was she planning on using one of those cue sticks against him? "Kaol isn't with me," he said with a quick smile, "if that's what you're wondering. I apologize if I interrupted." He wondered at her discomfort as she turned red. It seemed far too human an emotion for Otterlin's assassin. Perhaps his earlier plan to embarrass her wasn't foiled yet. "But you were playing so beautifully that I—"
"It's fine."
She walked toward one of the chairs. He stood, blocking her path. She was of surprisingly average height. He glanced down at her form. Average height aside, her curves were enticing.
"What are you doing here?" she repeated.
He smiled roguishly. "We decided to meet tonight, don't you remember?"
"I thought it was a joke."
"I'm Crown Prince of Otterlin." He sank into a chair before the fire. "I never joke."
"Are you allowed to be here?"
"Allowed? Again, I'm a prince. I can do what I like."
"Yes, but I'm Otterlin's assassin."
He wouldn't be intimidated, even if she could grab that billiards cue and skewer him with it in a matter of seconds. "From your playing, it seems that you're a great deal more than that."
"What do you mean?"
"Well," he said, trying not to get lost in her strange, lovely eyes, "I don't think anyone who plays like that can be just a criminal."
"It seems like you have a soul," he teased. "Of course I have a soul. Everyone has a soul."
She was still red. He made her that uncomfortable? He fought his grin. This was too much fun. "How'd you like the books?"
"They were very nice," she said quietly. "They were wonderful, actually."
"I'm glad."
Their eyes met, and she retreated behind the back of the chair.
If he didn't know better, he would have thought himself to be the assassin. "How's training going? Any competitors giving you trouble?"
"Excellently," she said, but the corners of her mouth drifted downward. "And no, after today I don't think any of us will be giving anyone any trouble."
It took him a moment to realize she was thinking of the competitor who had been killed while trying to escape. She chewed on her bottom lip, quiet for a heartbeat, before she asked,
"Did Kaol give the order to kill Sven?"
"No," he said. "My father commanded all the guards to shoot to kill if any of you tried to escape. I don't think Kaol would ever have given that order," he added,
though he wasn't sure why. But the unnerving stillness in her eyes abated, at least.
When she didn't say more, Dorian asked as casually as he could, "On that note, how are you and Kaol getting along?"
Of course, it was a totally innocent question.
She shrugged, and he tried not to read too far into the gesture.
"Fine.
I think he hates me a bit, but given his position, I'm not surprised.
Why do you think he hates you?
For some reason, he couldn't bring himself to deny it.
Because I'm an assassin and he's captain of the guard, forced to belittle himself by minding the would-be king's champion.
Do you wish it were otherwise?
He gave her a lazy grin. That question wasn't so innocent.
She inched around the chair, coming closer to him, and his heart jumped a beat.
Well, who wants to be hated? Though I'd rather be hated than invisible.
But it makes no difference.
She wasn't convincing.
You're lonely, he said it before he could stop himself.
Lonely?
She shook her head, and finally, after all that coaxing, sat down. He fought against the urge to reach across the space between them to see if her hair was as silky as it looked.
No. I can survive well enough on my own, if given proper reading material.
He looked at the fire, trying not to think about where she'd been only weeks before, and what that kind of loneliness might have felt like. There were no books in Endovir. Still, it can't be pleasant to be one's own companion at all times.
And what would you do? She laughed. I'd rather not be seen as one of your lovers.
And what's wrong with that?
I'm already notorious as an assassin. I don't particularly feel like being notorious for sharing your bed.
He choked, but she went on.
Would you like me to explain why, or is it enough for me to say that I don't take jewels and trinkets as payment for my affection?
He snarled. I'm not going to debate morality with an assassin. You kill people for money, you know. Her eyes became hard, and she pointed to the door.
You may leave now.
You're dismissing me? He didn't know whether to laugh or yell.
Shall I summon Kaol to see what he thinks?
She crossed her arms, knowing she had won. Perhaps she'd also realized that there was fun to be had in riling him, too. Why should I be thrown from your rooms for stating the truth?
You just called me little more than a whoremonger.
He hadn't had this much fun in ages.
Tell me about your life. How you learned to play the pianoforte so masterfully.
And what was that piece? It was so sad. Were you thinking about a secret lover? He winked.
I practiced, she stood, walking toward the door. And yes, she snapped, I was.
You're quite prickly tonight, he said, trailing her.
He stopped a foot away, but the space between them felt strangely intimate,
especially as he purred, You're not nearly as chatty as you were this afternoon.
I'm not some odd commodity that you can gawk at. She stepped closer. I'm not some carnival exhibit, and you won't use me as part of some unfulfilled desire for adventure and excitement, which is undoubtedly why you chose me to be your champion.
His mouth fell open and he conceded a step. What? Was all he managed.
She stalked past him and dropped into the armchair. At least she wasn't leaving. Did you honestly think I wouldn't realize why you came here tonight? As someone who gave me the crown of a hero to read, which suggests a rather fanciful mind that yearns for adventure?
I don't think you're an adventurer, he muttered.
Oh? The castle offers so much excitement that the presence of Otterlin's assassin is nothing unusual? Nothing that would entice a young prince who's been confined to court all his life? And what does this competition suggest, for that matter? I'm already at your father's disposal. I won't become his son's jester, too.
It was his turn to blush.
Had he ever been scolded by anyone like this? His parents and tutors, perhaps, but certainly not a young woman.
Don't you know who you're talking to?
My dear prince, she drawled, examining her nails. You're alone in my rooms. The hallway door is very far away.
I can say whatever I wish.
He burst out laughing. She sat up and watched him, her head tilted to the side.
Her cheeks were flushed, making her blue eyes even brighter. Did she know what he might have wanted to do with her if she wasn't an assassin?
I'll go, he said at last, stopping himself from wondering if he could actually risk it,
risk his father's and Kaol's wrath, and what might happen if he decided to damn the consequences.
But I'll return. soon.
I'm sure, she said dryly.
Good night, Sardothian.
He looked around her rooms and grinned.
Tell me something before I leave.
This mystery lover of yours, he doesn't live in the castle, does he? He instantly knew he'd said the wrong thing when some of the light vanished from her eyes.
Good night, she said a bit coldly.
Dorian shook his head. I didn't mean to... She just waved him off, looking toward the fire. Understanding his dismissal, he strode to the door, each of his footsteps sounding in the now too silent room. He was almost to the threshold when she spoke, her voice distant.
His name was Sam.
She was still staring at the fire.
Was Sam.
What happened?
She looked at him, smiling sadly.
He died.
When?
He got out. He would have never teased her like that, never said a damn word if he'd known. Her words were strangled as she said,
13 months ago.
A glimmer of pain flashed across her face, so real and endless that he felt it in his gut.
I'm sorry, he breathed.
She shrugged, as if it could somehow diminish the grief he still saw in her eyes, shining so bright in the firelight.
So am I, she whispered,
and faced the fire again. Sensing she was truly done talking this time, Dorian cleared his throat. Good luck at the test tomorrow. She didn't say anything as he left the room. He couldn't banish her heart-wrenching music from his mind, even when he burned his mother's list of eligible maidens, even when he read a long book into the night, even when he finally fell asleep. Chapter 21 Selena dangled from the stone wall of the castle, her legs trembling as she dug her tar-covered fingers and toes into the cracks between the giant blocks. Brello shouted something at the other 19 remaining champions scaling the castle walls, but from 70 feet up, the wind carried his words away. One of the champions hadn't shown up for the test, and even his guards hadn't known where he went. Maybe he'd actually managed to escape. Risking it seemed better than this miserably stupid test, anyway. She gritted her teeth, inching her hand upward, and pulled herself up another foot. 20 feet up and about 30 feet away flapped the object of this insane race, a golden flag. The test was simple. Climb the castle to where the flag waved 90 feet in the air and retrieve it. First one who grabbed the flag and brought it back down received a pat on the back. Last one to reach the designated spot would be sent back to whatever gutter they came from. Surprisingly, no one had fallen yet, perhaps because the path to the flag was fairly easy. Balconies, windowsills, and trellises covered most of the space. Selena scooted up another few feet, her fingers aching. Looking down was always a bad idea. Even if Aerobin had forced her to stand on the ledge of his assassin's keep for hours on end to become accustomed to heights. She panted as she grasped another window ledge and hoisted herself up. It was deep enough that she could crouch within, and she took a moment to study the other competitors. Sure enough, Kane was in the lead, and had taken the easiest path toward the flag. Grave and Varen on his trail, Nox close behind, and Paylor, the young assassin, not far below him. There were so many competitors following him that their gear often got tangled together. They'd each been given the opportunity to select one object to aid them in their ascent. Rope, spikes, special boots, and sure enough, Kane had gone right for the rope. She'd taken a small tin of tar, and as Selena rose from her crouch in the windowsill, her sticky black hands and bare feet easily gripped the stone wall. She'd used some rope to strap the tin to her belt, and before she stepped out of the shade of the sill, she rubbed a little more on her palms. Someone gasped below, and she swallowed the urge to glance down. She knew she'd taken a more difficult path, but it was better than fighting off all the competitors taking the easy route. She wouldn't put it past Grave or Varen to shove her off the wall. Her hand suctioned onto the stone, and Selena heaved herself upward just in time to hear a shriek, a thump, and then silence, followed by the shouting of onlookers. A competitor had fallen and died. She looked down and beheld the body of Ned Clement, the murderer who'd called himself the Scythe and spent years in the labor camps of Calicalla for his crimes. A shudder went through her. Though the murder of the Eye-Eater had made many of the champions quite down, the sponsor certainly didn't seem to care that this test might very well kill a few more of them. She shimmied up a drain pipe, her thighs clinging to the iron. Kane hooked his long rope around a leering gargoyle's neck and swung across an expanse of flat wall, landing on a balcony ledge 15 feet below the flag. She fought her frustration as she worked her way up higher and higher, following the course of the drainpipe. The other competitors shuffled along, following Kane's path. There were a few more shouts, and she looked down long enough to see that Grave was causing a backup because he couldn't manage to toss his rope around the gargoyle's neck as Kane had. Varin nudged the assassin aside and moved past him, easily securing his own rope. Knox, now behind Grave, made to do the same, but Grave started cursing at him, and Knox stopped, lifting his hands in a gesture of placation. Smirking, Selena braced her blackened feet on a stabilizing bracket holding the pipe in place. She'd soon be directly parallel to the flag, and then only 30 feet of bare stone would separate her from it. Selena eased farther up the pipe, her toes sticking to the metal. 15 feet below her pipe, a mercenary was clutching the horns of a gargoyle as he set about fastening his rope around its head. He seemed to be taking the faster route across a cluster of gargoyles. Then he'd have to swing onto a landing 18 feet away before making his way to the other gargoyles on which Grave and Knox now quarreled. She was in no danger of him trying to scale the drainpipe to bother her. So inch by inch, she moved up, the wind battering her hair this way and that. It was then that she heard Knox shout, and Selena looked in time to see Grave shove him from their perch atop the gargoyle's back. Knox swung wide, the rope wrapped around his middle going taut as he collided with the castle wall below. Selena froze, her breath catching as Knox scraped his hands and feet against the stone to catch hold. But Grave wasn't done yet. He bent under the guise of adjusting his boot, and Selena saw a small dagger glint in the sunlight. How he'd gotten the weapon past his guards was a feat in itself. Selena's warning cry was carried away by the wind as Grave set about sawing Knox's rope from its tether on the gargoyle. None of the other champions nearby bothered to do anything, though Paylor paused a moment before easing around Grave. If Knox died, it was one less competitor, and if they interfered, it might cost them this test. Selena knew she should keep moving, but something kept her rooted to the spot. Knox couldn't find a hold on the stone wall, and without a nearby ledge or gargoyle to grasp, he had nowhere to go but down. Once the rope broke, he'd fall. One by one, the threads of his rope snapped beneath Grave's dagger, and Knox, sensing the vibrations, looked up at the assassin in horror. If he fell, there was no chance of surviving. A few more slices of Grave's blade, and the rope would be severed entirely. The rope groaned. Selena moved. She slid down the drainpipe, the flesh of her feet and hands tearing open as the metal cut into her skin, but she didn't let herself think of the pain. The mercenary on the gargoyle below only had time to lean into the wall as she slammed onto the creature's head, gripping its horns to steady herself. The mercenary had already tied one end of his climbing rope around the gargoyle's neck. Now she seized it and tied the other around her own waist. The rope was long enough and strong enough, and the four gargoyles perched beside hers would provide enough space to run. "Touch this rope and I'll gut you," she warned the mercenary, and readied herself. Knox shouted at Grave, and she dared a look to where the thief dangled. There was a sharp snag of rope breaking, and Knox's cry of fear and rage, and Selena took off, sprinting across the backs of the four gargoyles, before she launched herself into the void.
Chapter 22.
Wind tore at her, but Selena kept her focus on Nox, falling so fast, so far from her outstretched hands. People shouted below, and the light bouncing off the glass castle blinded her. But there he was, just a hand's breadth from her fingers, his gray eyes wide, his arms swinging as if he could turn them into wings. In a heartbeat, her arms were around his middle, and she slammed into him so hard that the breath was knocked from her chest. Together they plummeted like a stone, down, down, down toward the rising ground. Nox grabbed the rope, but even that wasn't enough to lighten the blinding impact on her torso as the rope went taut. She held on to him with every ounce of strength she had, willing her arms not to let him go. The rope sent them careening toward the wall. Selena hardly had the sense to lean her head away from the approaching stones, and the impact burst through her side and shoulder. She held tight to him still, focusing on her arms, on her too shallow breathing. They hung there, flat against the wall, panting as they looked at the ground 30 feet below. The rope held.
"Lillian,"
Nox said, gasping for breath. He pressed his face under her hair.
"God's above."
But cheers erupted from below and drowned out his words. Selena's limbs trembled so violently that she had to focus on gripping Nox, and her stomach turned over and over and over. But they were still in the middle of the test, still expected to complete it, and Selena looked up. All the champions had stopped to see her save the falling thief, all except one, who perched high, high above them. Selena could only gape as the flag was ripped down, and Kane howled his triumph. More cheers rose up to meet them as Kane waved the flag for everyone to see. She seethed. She would have won if she'd taken the easy route. She would have gotten there in half the time it took Kane. But Kaol told her to stay in the middle anyway, and her path had been far more impressive and demonstrative of her skills. Kane just had to jump and swing. Amateur scaling. Besides, if she had won, if she'd gone the easy way, she wouldn't have saved Nox. She clenched her jaw. Could she get back up there in time? Perhaps Nox could take the rope, and she'd just scale the wall with her bare hands. There was nothing worse than second place. But even as she thought it, Varen, Grave, Paylor, and Renault climbed the last few feet to the spot, tapping it with a hand before descending.
"Lillian, Nox, hurry up," Brello called, and she peered down at the weapons master.
Selena scowled and started sliding her feet along the cracks in the stone, looking for a foothold. Her skin, raw and bleeding in spots, stung as she found a crevice for her toes to squeeze into. Carefully, carefully, she pulled herself up.
"I'm sorry,"
Nox breathed, his legs knocking into hers as he also sought out a foothold.
"It's fine," she told him.
Shaking, numb, Selena climbed back up the wall, leaving Nox to figure out the way on his own. Foolish. It had been so foolish to save him. What had she been thinking?
"Cheer up," Kaol said, drinking from his glass of water. 18th place is fine. At least Nox placed behind you."
Selena said nothing and pushed her carrots around on her plate. It had taken 2 baths and an entire bar of soap to get the tar off her aching hands and feet, and Philippa had spent 30 minutes cleaning out and binding the wounds on each. And though Selena had stopped shaking, she could still hear the shriek and thump of Ned Clement hitting the ground. They'd carried his body away before she finished the test. Only his death had saved Nox from elimination. Grave hadn't even been scolded. There had been no rules against playing dirty.
"You're doing exactly like we planned," Kaol went on, "though I'd hardly consider your valiant rescue to be entirely discreet."
She glared at him. "Well, I still lost." While Dorian had congratulated her for saving Nox, and while the thief had hugged and thanked her again and again, only Kaol had frowned when the test was over. Apparently, daring rescues weren't part of a jewel thief's repertoire. Kaol's brown eyes shone golden in the midday sun.
"Wasn't learning to lose gracefully part of your training?"
"No," she said sourly. "Aerobin told me that second place was just a nice title for the first loser."
"Aerobin Hommel?"
Kaol asked, setting down his glass.
"The King of the Assassins?"
She looked toward the window, and the glittering expanse of Rifthold barely visible beyond it. It was strange to think that Aerobin was in the same city, that he was so close to her now. "You know he was my master, don't you?"
"I'd forgotten,"
Kaol said. Aerobin would have flogged her for saving Nox, jeopardizing her own safety and place in this competition.
"He oversaw your training personally?"
"He trained me himself, and then brought in tutors from all over Aurelia. The fighting masters from the rice fields of the southern continent, poison experts from the Bogdano jungle. Once he sent me to the silent assassins in the Red Desert. No price was too high for him. Or me," she added, fingering the fine thread on her bathrobe. "He didn't bother to tell me until I was 14 that I was expected to pay him back for all of it."
"He trained you, and then made you pay for it?"
She shrugged, but was unable to hide the flash of anger. "Courtesans go through the same experience. They're taken in at a young age, and are bound to their brothels until they can earn back every coin that went into their training, upkeep, and wardrobe."
"That's despicable,"
he spat, and she blinked at the anger in his voice, anger that, for once, was not directed at her.
"Did you pay it back?"
A cold smile that didn't reach her eyes spread across her face. "Oh, down to the last copper. And he then went out and spent all of it. Over 500,000 gold coins. Gone in 3 hours." Kaol started from his seat. She shoved the memory down so deep that it stopped hurting. "You still haven't apologized," she said, changing the subject before Kaol could inquire further.
"Apologized? For what?"
"For all the horrid things you said yesterday afternoon when I was sparring with Nehemia." He narrowed his eyes, taking the bait.
"I won't apologize for speaking the truth."
"The truth? You treated me like I'm a crazed criminal."
"And you said that you hated me more than anyone alive."
"I meant every word of it." However, a smile began to tug at her lips, and she soon found it reflected on his face. He tossed a piece of bread at her, which she caught in one hand and threw back at him. He caught it with ease. "Idiot," she said, grinning now.
"Crazed criminal," he returned, grinning too.
"I really do hate you."
"At least I didn't come in 18th place," he said.
Selena felt her nostrils flare, and it was all Kaol could do to duck the apple she chucked at his head. It wasn't until later that Philippa brought the news. The champion who hadn't shown up for the test had been found dead in a servant's stairwell, brutally mauled and dismembered. The new murder cast a pall over the next 2 weeks, and the two tests they brought with them. Selena passed the tests, stealth and tracking, without drawing much attention to herself or risking her neck to save anyone. No other champions were murdered, thankfully. But Selena still found herself looking over her shoulder constantly, even though Kaol seemed to consider the two murders to be just unfortunate incidents. Every day she got better at running, going farther and faster, and managed to keep from killing Kane when he taunted her at training. The Crown Prince didn't bother to show his face in her rooms again, and she only saw him during the tests, when he usually just grinned and winked at her, and made her feel ridiculously tingly and warm. But she had more important things to worry about. There were only 9 weeks left until the final duel, and some of the others, including Nox, were doing well enough that those 4 spots were starting to seem rather precious. Kane would definitely be there, but who would the other final 3 be? She'd always been so sure she'd make it. But if she were honest with herself, Selena wasn't so sure anymore. Chapter 23 Selena gaped at the ground. She knew these sharp gray rocks. knew how they crunched beneath her feet, how they smelled after the rain, how they could so easily cut into her skin when she was thrown down. The rocks stretched for miles, rising into jagged, fang-like mountains that pierced the cloudy sky. In the frigid wind, she had little clothing to protect her from its stinging gusts. As she touched the dirty rags, her stomach rose in her throat. What had happened? She pivoted, shackles clanking, and took in the desolate waste that was Endovir. She had failed. Failed and been sent back here. There was no chance of escape. She had tasted freedom, come so close to it, and now... Selena screamed as excruciating pain shot down her back, barely heralded by the crack of the whip. She fell onto the ground, stone slicing into her raw knees. "Get on your feet!" someone barked. Tears stung her eyes, and the whip creaked as it rose again. She would be killed this time. She would die from the pain of it. The whip fell, slicing into bone, reverberating through her body, making everything collapse and explode in agony, shifting her body into a graveyard, a dead... Selena's eyes flew open. She panted.
"Are you?"
someone said beside her, and she jerked. Where was she?
"It was a dream," said Kaol.
She stared at him, then looked around the room, running a hand through her hair. Rifthold, Rifthold, that's where she was, in the glass castle. No, in the stone castle beneath. She was sweating, and the sweat on her back felt uncomfortably like blood. She felt dizzy, nauseated, too small and too large all at once. Though her windows were shut, an odd draft from somewhere in her room kissed her face, smelling strangely of roses.
"Selena, it was a dream,"
the captain of the guard said again.
"You were screaming."
He gave her a shaky smile.
"I thought you were being murdered."
Selena reached around to touch her back, beneath her nightshirt. She could feel the three ridges, and some smaller ones, but nothing, nothing. "I was being whipped." She shook her head to remove the memory from her mind. "What are you doing here? It's not even dawn." She crossed her arms, flushing slightly.
"It's Sam Hewen. I'm canceling our training today, but I wanted to see if you plan to attend the service."
"Today's... what? It's Sam Hewen today? Why has no one mentioned it? Is there a feast tonight?" Could she have become so enmeshed in the competition that she'd lost track of time? He frowned.
"Of course, but you're not invited."
"Of course. And will you be summoning the dead to you this haunted night, or lighting a bonfire with your companions?"
"I don't partake in such superstitious nonsense."
"Be careful, my cynical friend," she warned, putting a hand in the air. "The gods and the dead are closest to the earth this day. They can hear every nasty comment you make." He rolled his eyes.
"It's a silly holiday to celebrate the coming of winter. The bonfires just produce ash to cover the fields."
"As an offering to the gods to keep them safe."
"As a way to fertilize them."
Selena pushed back the covers. "So says you," she said as she stood. She adjusted her drenched nightgown. She reeked of sweat. He snorted, following after her as she walked.
"I never took you for a superstitious person. How does that fit into your career?"
She glared at him over her shoulder before she strode into the bathing chamber, Kaol close behind. She paused on the threshold. "Are you going to join me?" she said, and Kaol stiffened, realizing his error. He slammed the door in response. Selena found him waiting in her dining room when she emerged, her hair dripping water onto the floor. "Don't you have your own breakfast?"
"You still haven't given me an answer."
"An answer to what?" She sat down across the table and spooned porridge into a bowl. All that was needed was a heap, no, three heaps, of sugar, and some hot cream, and...
"Are you going to temple?"
"I'm allowed to go to temple, but not to the feast?" She took a spoonful of the porridge.
"Religious observances shouldn't be denied to anyone."
"And the feast is?"
"A show of debauchery."
"Ah,
I see.
She swallowed another bite. Oh, she loved porridge, but perhaps it needed another spoonful of sugar.
Well, are you going? We need to leave soon if you are.
No, she said through her food.
For someone so superstitious, you risk angering the gods by not attending. I imagine that an assassin would take more interest in the Day of the Dead.
She made a demented face as she continued eating.
I worship in my own way. Perhaps I'll make a sacrifice or two of my own.
He rose, patting his sword.
Mind yourself while I'm gone. Don't bother dressing too elaborately. Brello told me that you're still training this afternoon. You've got a test tomorrow.
Again? Didn't we just have one 3 days ago? She moaned. The last test had been javelin throwing on horseback, and a spot on her wrist was still tender. But he said nothing more, and her chambers turned silent. Though she tried to forget it, the sound of the whip still snapped in her ears. Grateful the service was finally over, Dorian Havilliard strode by himself through the castle grounds. Religion neither convinced nor moved him, and after hours of sitting in a pew, muttering prayer after prayer, he was in desperate need of some fresh air and solitude. He sighed through his clenched teeth, rubbing a spot on his temple, and headed toward the garden. He passed a cluster of ladies, each of whom curtsied and giggled behind their fans. Dorian gave them a terse nod as he strode by. His mother had used the ceremony as a chance to point out all the eligible ladies to him. He'd spent the entire service trying not to scream at the top of his lungs. Dorian turned around a hedge, almost crashing into a figure of blue-green velvet. It was the color of a mountain lake, that gem-like shade that didn't quite have a name. Not to mention, the dress was about 100 years out of fashion. His gaze rose to her face, and he smiled. "Hello, Lady Lillian," he said, bowing, and then turned to her two companions. "Princess Nehemia? Captain Westfall?" Dorian eyed the assassin's dress again. The folds of fabric, like the flowing waters of a river, were rather attractive. "You're looking festive." Selena's brows lowered. "The Lady Lillian's servants were attending the service when she dressed," said Kaol. "There was nothing else to wear." Of course, corsets required assistance to get in and out of, and the dresses were a labyrinth of secret clasps and ties.
"My apologies, my lord prince," Selena said. Her eyes were bright and angry, and a blush rose to her cheek. "I'm truly sorry my clothes don't suit your taste."
"No, no," he said quickly, glancing at her feet. They were clad in red shoes, red like the winter berries beginning to pop out on the bushes. "You look very nice, just a bit out of place.
Centuries, actually." She gave him an exasperated look. He turned to Nehemia.
"Forgive me," he said in his best eel way, which wasn't very impressive at all. "How are you?"
Her eyes shone with amusement at his shoddy eel way, but she nodded in acknowledgement.
"I am well, Your Highness," she answered in his language.
Dorian's attention flicked to her two guards, who lurked in the shadows nearby, waiting, watching. Dorian's blood thrummed in his veins. For weeks now, Duke Parrington had been pushing for a plan to bring more forces into Eelway, to crush the rebels so efficiently that they wouldn't dare challenge Otterlin's rule again. Just yesterday, the Duke presented a plan. They would deploy more legions and keep Nehemia here to discourage any retaliation from the rebels. Not particularly inclined to add hostage-taking to his repertoire of abilities, Dorian had spent hours arguing against it. But while some of the council members had also voiced their disapproval, the majority seemed to think the Duke's strategy to be a sound one. Still, Dorian had convinced them to back off about it until his father returned. That would give him time to win over some of the Duke's supporters. Now, standing before her, Dorian quickly looked away from the princess. If he were anyone but the Crown Prince, he would warn her. But if Nehemia left before she was supposed to, the Duke would know who had told her and inform his father. Things were bad enough between Dorian and the king.
He didn't need to be branded as a rebel sympathizer.
"Are you going to the feast tonight?" Dorian asked the princess, forcing himself to look at her and keep his features neutral.
Nehemia looked to Selena.
"Are you attending?"
Selena gave her a smile that only meant trouble.
"Unfortunately, I have other plans. Isn't that right, Your Highness?"
She didn't bother to hide the undercurrent of annoyance. Kaol coughed, suddenly very interested in the berries in the hedges. Dorian was on his own.
"Don't blame me," Dorian said smoothly.
"You accepted an invitation to that party in Rifthold weeks ago."
Her eyes flickered, but Dorian wouldn't yield. He couldn't bring her to the feast, not with so many watching. There would be too many questions, not to mention too many people. Keeping track of her would be difficult. Nehemia frowned at Selena.
"So you're not going?"
"No, but I'm sure you'll have a lovely time," Selena said, then switched into Eelway and said something else.
Dorian's Eelway was just competent enough that he understood the gist of it.
"His Highness certainly knows how to keep women entertained."
Nehemia laughed, and Dorian's face warmed. They made a formidable pair, gods help them all.
"Well, we're very important and very busy," Selena said to him, linking elbows with the princess. Perhaps allowing them to be friends was a horrible, dangerous idea. "So we must be off. Good day to you, Your Highness."
She curtsied, the red and blue gems in her belt sparkling in the sun.
She looked over her shoulder, giving Dorian a sneer as she led the princess deeper into the garden. Dorian glared at Kaol.
"Thanks for your help."
The captain clapped him on the shoulder.
"You think that was bad? You should see them when they really get going."
With that, he strode after the women. Dorian wanted to yell, to pull out his hair. He'd enjoyed seeing Selena the other night, enjoyed it immensely. But for the past few weeks, he'd gotten caught up in council meetings and holding court, and hadn't been able to visit her. Were it not for the feast, he'd go to her again. He hadn't meant to annoy her with talk about the dress, though it was outdated, nor had he known she'd be that irritated about not being invited to the feast, but... Dorian scowled and walked off to the kennels. Selena smiled to herself, running a finger across a neatly trimmed hedge. She thought the dress was lovely.
Festive indeed.
"No, no, Your Highness,"
Kaol was saying to Nehemia, slow enough that she could understand.
"I'm not a soldier, I'm a guard."
"There is no difference,"
the princess retorted, her accent thick and a bit unwieldy. Still, Kaol understood enough to bristle, and Selena could hardly contain her glee. She'd managed to see Nehemia a fair amount over the past 2 weeks, mostly just for brief walks and dinners, where they discussed what it was like for Nehemia to grow up in Eelway, what she thought of Rifthold, and who at court had managed to annoy the princess that day, which, to Selena's delight, was usually everyone.
"I'm not trained to fight in battles," Kaol replied through his teeth.
"You kill on the orders of your king."
"Your king."
Nehemia might not be fully versed in their language, but she was smart enough to know the power of saying those two words. "Your king, not hers." While Selena could listen to Nehemia rant about the King of Otterland for hours, they were in a garden. Other people might be listening. A shudder went through Selena, and she interrupted before Nehemia could say more. "I think it's useless arguing with her, Kaol," Selena said, nudging the captain of the guard with her elbow. "Perhaps you shouldn't have given Taryn your title. Can you reclaim it? It'd prevent a lot of confusion."
"How'd you remember my brother's name?"
She shrugged, not quite understanding the gleam in his eye.
"You told me. Why wouldn't I remember it?"
He looked handsome today. It was the way his hair met his golden skin, in the tiny gaps between the strands, in the way it fell across his brow.
"I suppose you'll enjoy the feast, without me there, that is," she said morosely.
He snorted. "Are you that upset about missing it?"
"No,
she said, sweeping her unbound hair over a shoulder. But, well, it's a party, and everyone loves parties.
Shall I bring you a trinket from the revelry?
Only if it consists of a sizable portion of roast lamb.
The air was bright and clear around them.
The feast isn't that exciting,
he offered. It's the same as any supper. I can assure you the lamb will be dry and tough.
As my friend, you should either bring me along or keep me company.
Friend? He asked.
She blushed. Well, scowling escort is a better description. Or reluctant acquaintance, if you prefer.
To her surprise, he smiled.
The princess grabbed Selena's hand.
You'll teach me, she said in Eelway. Teach me how to better speak your language, and teach me how to write and read it better than I do now, so I don't have to suffer through those horribly boring old men they call tutors.
Selena began in the common tongue, and winced. She felt guilty for leaving Nehemia out of the conversation for so long, and having the princess be fluent in both languages would be great fun. But convincing Kaol to let her see Nehemia was always a hassle, because he insisted on being there to keep watch. He'd never agree to sitting through lessons.
I don't know how to properly teach you my language, Selena lied.
Nonsense, Nehemia said. You'll teach me, after
whatever it is you do with this one,
for an hour every day before supper.
Nehemia raised her chin in a way that suggested saying no wasn't an option. Selena swallowed and did her best to look pleasant as she turned to Kaol, who observed them with raised eyebrows.
She wishes me to tutor her every day before supper.
I'm afraid that's not possible, he said. She translated.
Nehemia gave him the withering glare that usually made people start sweating.
Why not? She fell into Eelway. She's smarter than most of the people in this castle.
Kaol, thankfully, caught the general gist of it.
I don't think that...
Am I not Princess of Eelway? Nehemia interrupted in the common tongue.
Your Highness, Kaol began,
but Selena silenced him with a wave of her hand.
They were approaching the clock tower, black and menacing as always. But kneeling before it was Cain.
His head bent, he focused on something on the ground.
At the sound of their footsteps, Cain's head shot up.
He grinned broadly and stood. His hands were covered in dirt, but before Selena could better observe him, or his strange behavior, he nodded to Kaol and stalked away behind the tower.
Nasty brute,
Selena breathed, still staring in the direction in which he'd disappeared.
Who is he?
Nehemia asked in Eelway. A soldier in the king's army, Selena said, though now he serves Duke Parrington.
Nehemia looked after Cain, and her dark eyes narrowed.
Something about him makes me want to beat in his face.
Selena laughed. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Kaol said nothing as he began walking again. She and Nehemia took up behind him, and as they crossed the small patio in which the clock tower stood, Selena looked at the spot where Cain had just been kneeling. He dug out the dirt packed into the hollows of the strange mark in the flagstone, making the mark clearer.
What do you think this is?
She asked the princess, pointing at the mark etched into the tile.
And why had Cain been cleaning it?
A word mark,
the princess replied, giving it a name in Selena's own language.
Selena's brows rose. It was just a triangle inside of a circle.
Can you read these marks? She asked.
A word mark? How strange.
No,
Nehemia said quickly.
They're a part of an ancient religion that died long ago.
What religion? Selena asked. Look, there's another. She pointed at another mark a few feet away. It was a vertical line with an inverted peak stretching upward from its middle.
You should leave it alone, Nehemia said sharply, and Selena blinked. Such things were forgotten for a reason. What are you talking about? Asked Kaol,
and she explained the gist of their conversation. When she finished, he curled his lip, but said nothing.
They continued on, and Selena saw another mark. It was a strange shape. A small diamond with two inverted points protruding from either side. The top and bottom peaks of the diamond were elongated into a straight line, and it seemed to be symmetrically perfect. Had the king had them carved when he built the clock tower? Or did they predate it? Nehemia was staring at her forehead, and Selena asked, "Is there dirt on my face?"
"No,"
Nehemia said a bit distantly, her brows knotting as she studied Selena's brow. The princess suddenly stared into Selena's eyes with a ferocity that made the assassin recoil slightly.
"You know nothing about the word marks?"
The clock tower chimed. "No," Selena said. "I don't know anything about them."
"You're hiding something,"
the princess said softly in Ilwe, though it was not accusatory.
"You are much more than you seem, Lillian."
Well, I should hope I'm more than just some simpering courtier," she said with as much bravado as she could muster. She grinned broadly, hoping Nehemia would stop looking so strange and stop staring at her brow. "Can you teach me how to speak Ilwe properly?"
"If you can teach me more of your ridiculous language," said the princess, though some caution still lingered in her eyes. What had Nehemia seen that had caused her to act that way?
"It's a deal," Selena said with a weak smile.
"Just don't tell him.
Captain Westfall leaves me alone in the mid-afternoon. The hour before supper is perfect."
"Then I shall come tomorrow at 5, Nehemia said.
The princess smiled and began to walk once more, a spark appearing in her black eyes. Selena could only follow after her. Chapter 24. Selena lay on the bed, staring at a pool of moonlight on the floor. It filled in the dusty gaps between the stone tiles and turned everything a bluish silver that made her feel as if she were frozen in an everlasting moment. She didn't fear the night, though she found little comfort in its dark hours. It was just the time when she slept, the time when she stalked and killed, the time when the stars emerged with glittering beauty and made her feel wonderfully small and insignificant. Selena frowned. It was only midnight, and even though they had another test tomorrow, she couldn't sleep. Her eyes were too heavy to read. She wouldn't play the pianoforte for fear of another embarrassing encounter, and she most certainly wouldn't amuse herself with fantasies of what the feast was like. She was still wearing her emerald blue gown, too lazy to change. She traced the moonlight to where it lapped upon the tapestry-covered wall. The tapestry was odd, old, and not very carefully preserved. Images of forest animals amongst drooping trees dotted the large expanse. A woman, the only human in the tapestry, stood near the floor. She was life-size and remarkably beautiful. Though she had silver hair, her face was young, and her flowing white gown seemed to move in the moonlight. Selena sat up in bed. Did the tapestry sway slightly? She glanced at the window. It was firmly shut. The tapestry was barely blowing outward, not to the side. Could it be? Her skin tingled, and she lit a candle before approaching the wall. The tapestry stopped moving. She reached to the end of the fabric and pulled it up. There was only stone, but Selena pushed back the heavy folds of the work and tucked it behind a chest to keep it aloft. A vertical groove ran down the face of the wall, different from the rest, and then another one, not 3 feet from it. They emerged from the floor, and just above Selena's head they met in a—
It is a door!
Selena leaned her shoulder into the slab of stone. It gave a little, and her heart jumped. She pushed again, the candle flickering in her hand. The door groaned as it moved slightly. Grunting, she shoved, and finally it swung open. A dark passage loomed before her. A breeze blew into the black depths, pulling the strands of her hair past her face. A shiver ran down her spine. Why was the wind going inward, especially when it had blown the tapestry out?
She looked back at the bed, which was littered with books she wasn't going to read tonight. She took a step into the passage. The light of the candle revealed that it was made of stone and thickly coated in dust. She stepped back into her room. If she were to go exploring, she'd need proper provisions. It was a pity she didn't have a sword or a dagger. Selena put her candle down. She also needed a torch, or at least some extra candlesticks. While she might be used to darkness, she wasn't foolish enough to trust it. Moving through her room, trembling with excitement, Selena gathered two balls of yarn from Philippa's sewing basket, along with three sticks of chalk and one of her makeshift knives. She tucked three extra candlesticks into the pockets of her cape, which she wrapped tightly around herself. Again, she stood before the dark passage. It was terribly dark, and seemed to be beckoning to her. The breeze blew into the passage again. Selena pushed a chair into the doorway. It wouldn't do to have it slam shut on her and leave her trapped forever. She tied a string to the back of the chair, knotting it 5 times, and held the ball in her spare hand. If she got lost, this would lead her back. She carefully folded the tapestry over the door, just in case someone came in. Striding into the passage, she found it to be cold but dry. Cobwebs hung everywhere, and there were no windows, only a very long stair that descended far beyond the light of her little candle. She tensed as she stepped down, waiting for a single sound that would send her springing back to her rooms. It was silent. Silent and dead, and completely forgotten. Selena held the candle aloft, her cape trailing behind her, leaving a clean wake on the dust-covered stairs. Minutes passed, and she scanned the walls for any engravings or markings, but saw none. Was this just a forgotten servant's passage? She found herself a bit disappointed. The bottom of the stairs soon appeared, and she came to a halt before 3 equally dark and imposing portals. Where was she? She had difficulty imagining that such a space could be forgotten in a castle filled with so many people, but the ground was covered with dust. Not even a hint of a footprint. Knowing how the story always went, Selena lifted the candle to the arches above the portals, looking for any inscriptions regarding the sure death that would meet her if she walked beneath a specific arch. She took stock of the ball of yarn in her hand. Now it was a little more than a lump of string. She set down her candle and tied another ball to the end of the string. Perhaps she should have taken another. Well, at least she still had the chalk. She chose the door in the middle, if only because it was closer. On the other side, the staircase continued downward. In fact, it went so far down that she wondered if she were beneath the castle. The passage became very damp and very cold, and Selena's candle sputtered in the moisture. There were many archways now, but Selena chose to go straight, following the moisture that grew by the inch. Water trickled down the walls, and the stone became slick with whatever fungus had grown over the centuries. Her red velvet shoes felt flimsy and thin against the wetness of the chamber. She would have considered turning back, were it not for the sound that arose. It was running water, slow-moving. In fact, as she walked, the passage became lighter. It was not the light of a candle, but rather the smooth white light of the outdoors, of the moon. Her yarn ran out, and she left it on the ground. There were no more turns to mark. She knew what this was. Rather, she didn't dare to hope that it was actually what she believed it to be. She hurried along, slipping twice, her heart pounding so loudly that she thought her ears would break. An archway appeared, and beyond it, Selena stared at the sewer that ran past, flowing straight out of the castle. It smelled unpleasant, to say the least. She stood along the side, examining the open gate that led to a wide stream that undoubtedly emptied into the sea or the Avery. There were no guards, and no locks, save for the iron fence that hovered over the surface, raised just enough to allow trash to pass through.
Four little boats were tied to either bank, and there were several other doors, some wooden, some iron, that led to this exit. It was probably an escape route for the king, though from the half-rotted condition of some of the boats, she wondered if he knew that it was here. She strode to the iron fence, putting her hand through one of the gaps. The night air was chilled, but not freezing. Trees loomed just beyond the stream. She must be in the back of the castle, the side that faced the sea. Were there any guards posted outside? She found a stone on the ground, a bit of fallen ceiling, and hurled it into the water beyond the gate. There was no sound of shifting armor, no muttering or cursing. She studied the other side. There was a lever to raise the gate for the boats. Selena set down her candle, removed her cloak, and emptied her pockets. Holding tightly with her hands, she placed one foot on the gate, then the other. It would be so easy to raise the gate. She felt reckless, reckless and wild. What was she doing in a palace? Why was she, Otterlin's assassin, participating in some absurd competition to prove that she was the best? She was the best. They were undoubtedly drunk now, all of them. She could take one of the less ancient boats and disappear into the night. Selena began to climb back over. She needed her cloak. Oh, they were fools for thinking that they could tame her. Her foot slipped on a slick rung, and Selena barely stifled her cry as she gripped the bars, cursing as her knee banged into the gate. Clinging to the gate, she closed her eyes. It was only water. She calmed her heart, letting her feet find their support again. The moon was almost blinding, so bright the stars were barely visible. She knew that she could easily escape, and that it would be foolish to do so. The king would find her, somehow, and Kaol would be disgraced and relieved of his position, and Princess Nehemia would be left alone with moronic company and, well. Selena straightened, her chin rising. She would not run from them as a common criminal. She would face them, face the king, and earn her freedom the honorable way. And why not take advantage of the free food and training for a while longer? Not to mention she'd need to stock up on provisions for her escape, and that could take weeks. Why rush any of it? Selena returned to her starting side and picked up the cloak. She'd win. And after she won, if she ever wanted to escape her servitude to the king, well, now she had a way out. Still, Selena had difficulty leaving the chamber. She was grateful for the silence of the passage as she walked upward, her legs burning from so many stairs. It was the right thing to do. Selena soon found herself before the other two portals. What other disappointments would she find in them? She had lost interest, but the breeze stirred again, and it blew so hard toward the far right arch that Selena took a step. The hair on her arms rose as she watched the flame of her candle bend forward, pointing to a darkness that seemed blacker than all the rest. Whispers lay beneath the breeze, speaking to her in forgotten languages. She shuddered, and decided to go in the opposite direction, to take the far left portal. Following whispers on Samhuin could only lead to trouble. Despite the breeze, the passage was warm. With each step up the winding stairs, the whispers faded away. Up and up and up, her heavy breathing and shuffling steps the only sounds. There were no twisting passages once she reached the top, but rather one straight hall that seemed to lead on forever. She followed it, her feet already tired. After some time, she was surprised to hear music. Actually, it was the sound of great revelry, and there was golden light ahead. It streamed in through a door or a window. She rounded the corner and ascended a small set of steps that led into a significantly smaller hallway. In fact, the ceiling was so low that she had to duck as she waddled toward the light. It wasn't a door, nor a window, but rather a bronze gate. Selena blinked at the light as she looked, from high above,
at the feast in the great hall.
Were these tunnels for spying?
She frowned at what she saw. Over 100 people eating, singing, dancing.
There was Kaol,
sitting beside some old man, talking and...
laughing?
His happiness made her own face flush in response, and Selena set down her candle. She peered at the other end of the massive hall. There were a few other grates just below the ceiling, though she could see no other squinting eyes beyond their ornate metalwork. Selena shifted her gaze to the dancers. Among them were a few of the champions, dressed finely, but not finely enough to conceal their poor dancing. Nox, who had now become her sparring and training partner, danced as well, perhaps a bit more elegantly than the others, though she still pitied the ladies who danced with him, but... the other champions were allowed to attend, and she wasn't? She gripped the gate, pressing her face against it to get a better look. Sure enough, there were more champions seated at the tables. Even the pimply-faced Paylor sat near Kaol, a half-rate boy assassin. She bared her teeth. How dare she be denied an invitation to the feast? The tightness in her chest abated only slightly when she couldn't find Kane's face among the revelers. At least they kept him locked up in a cage, too. She spotted the Crown Prince, dancing and laughing with some blonde idiot. She wanted to hate him for refusing to invite her. She was his champion, after all, but she had difficulty not staring at him. She had no desire to talk to him, but rather just to look at him, to see that unusual grace and the kindness in his eyes that had made her tell him about Sam. While he might be a Havilliard, he was... well, she still very much wanted to kiss him. Selena scowled as the dance finished, and the Crown Prince kissed the hand of the blonde woman. She turned away from the grate. Here, the hallway ended. She glanced back at the feast, only to see Kaol stand from the table and begin weaving his way out of the great hall. What if he came to her rooms and found her missing? Hadn't he promised to bring her something from the feast? Groaning at the thought of all the stairs she now had to climb, she picked up her candle and yarn and hurried toward the comfort of higher ceilings, rolling up the string as she went. Down and down she ran, taking the steps two by two. She burst past the portals and darted up the stairs to her room, the small light growing with each bound. Kaol would throw her in the dungeons if he found her in some secret passageway, especially if the passageway led out of the castle. She was sweating when she reached her chambers. She kicked the chair away, swung the stone door shut, pulled the tapestry over it, and flung herself on the bed. After hours of enjoying himself at the feast, Dorian entered Selena's rooms, not sure what exactly he was doing in the chambers of an assassin at 2 in the morning. His head spun from the wine, and he was so tired from all the dancing that he was fairly certain that if he sat down, he'd fall asleep. Her chambers were silent and dark, and he cracked open her bedroom door to peer inside. Though she was asleep on the bed, she still wore that strange dress. Somehow it seemed far more fitting now that she lay sprawled upon the red blanket. Her golden hair was spread around her, and a flush of pink bloomed on her cheeks. A book lay by her side, open and still waiting for her to turn the page. He remained in the doorway, fearful that she'd wake up if he took another step. Some assassin. She hadn't even bothered to stir. But there was nothing of the assassin in her face. Not a trace of aggression or bloodlust lay across her features. He knew her somehow, and he knew she wouldn't harm him. It made little sense. When they talked, as sharp as her words usually were, he felt at ease, as if he could say anything. And she must have felt the same after she'd told him about Sam, whoever he'd been. So here he was, in the middle of the night. She flirted with him, but was it real? A footstep sounded, and he found Kaol standing across the foyer. The captain stalked over to Dorian and grabbed him by the arm. Dorian knew better than to struggle as his friend dragged him through the foyer and stopped in front of the door to the hall,
"What are you doing here?"
Kaol hissed softly.
"What are you doing here?" Dorian countered, trying to keep his voice quiet.
It was the better question, too. If Kaol spent so much time warning him about the dangers of associating with Selena, what was he doing here in the middle of the night?
"By the word, Dorian, she's an assassin. Please, please tell me you haven't been here before."
Dorian couldn't help his smirk.
"I don't even want an explanation. Just get out, you reckless idiot. Get out!"
Kaol grabbed him by the collar of his jacket, and Dorian might have punched his friend had Kaol not been so lightning fast. Before he knew it, he was roughly tossed into the hallway, and the door closed and locked behind him. Dorian, for some reason, didn't sleep well that night. Kaol Westfall took a deep breath.
What was he doing here?
Had he any right to treat the Crown Prince of Otterlin in such a manner when he himself was going against reason? He didn't understand the rage that arose upon seeing Dorian standing in the doorway. Didn't want to understand that sort of anger. It wasn't jealousy, but something beyond it. Something that transformed his friend into something else. Someone he didn't know. He was fairly certain she was a virgin, but did Dorian know it? It probably made him more interested. He sighed and eased the door open, wincing as it creaked loudly. She was still in her clothes, and while she looked beautiful, that did nothing to mask the killing potential that lay beneath. It was present in her strong jaw, in the slope of her eyebrows, in the perfect stillness of her form. She was a honed blade made by the King of Assassins for his own profit. She was a sleeping animal, a mountain cat or a dragon, and her markings of power were everywhere. He shook his head and walked into the bedroom. At the sound of his step, she opened an eye.
"It's not morning," she grumbled and rolled over.
"I brought you a present."
He felt immensely foolish and for a moment considered running from her rooms.
"A present?"
she said more clearly, turning toward him and blinking.
"It's nothing. They were giving them out at the party. Just give me your hand."
It was a lie, sort of. They had given them to the women of the nobility as favors, and he'd snagged one from the basket as it was passed around. Most of the women would never wear them. They would be tossed aside or given to a favorite servant.
"Let me see it."
She lazily extended an arm. He fished in his pockets and pulled out the gift.
"Here."
He placed it in her palm. She examined it, smiling drowsily.
"A ring."
She put it on.
"How pretty."
It was simple, crafted of silver. Its only ornamentation lay in the fingernail-sized amethyst embedded in its center. The surface of the gem was smooth and round, and it gleamed up at the assassin like a purple eye.
"Thank you,"
she said, her eyelids drooping.
"You're wearing your gown, Selena."
His blush refused to fade.
"I'll change in a moment."
He knew she wouldn't.
"I just need to rest."
Then she was asleep, a hand upon her breast, the ring hovering over her heart. With a disgruntled sigh, the captain grabbed a blanket from the nearby sofa and tossed it over her. He was half tempted to remove the ring from her finger, but...
well, there was something peaceful looking about her.
Rubbing his neck, his face still burning, he walked from her rooms, wondering how, exactly, he'd explain this to Dorian tomorrow. Chapter 25. Selena dreamt. She was walking down the long secret passage again. She didn't have a candle, nor did she have a string to lead her. She chose the portal on the right, for the other two were dank and unwelcoming, and this one seemed to be warm and pleasant. And the smell, it wasn't the smell of mildew, but of roses. The passage twisted and wound, and Selena found herself descending a narrow set of stairs. For some reason she couldn't name, she avoided brushing against the stone.
The staircase swooped down, winding on and on, and she followed the rose scent whenever another door or arch appeared. Just when she grew tired of so much walking, she reached the bottom of a set of stairs and stopped. She stood before an old wooden door. A bronze knocker in the form of a skull hung in its center. It seemed to be smiling. She waited for that terrible breeze, or to hear someone cry, or for it to become cold and damp. But it was still warm, and it still smelled lovely, and so Selena, with a bit of mustard courage, turned the handle. Without a sound, the door swung open. She expected to find a dark, forgotten room, but this was something far different. A shaft of moonlight shot through a small hole in the ceiling, falling upon the face of a beautiful marble statue lying upon a stone slab. No, not a statue. A sarcophagus. It was a tomb. Trees were carved into the stone ceiling, and they stretched above the sleeping female figure. A second sarcophagus had been placed beside the woman, depicting a man. Why was the woman's face bathed in moonlight, and the man's in darkness? He was handsome, his beard clipped and short, his brow broad and clear, and his nose straight and sturdy. He held a stone sword between his hands, its handle resting upon his chest. Her breath was sucked from her. A crown sat upon his head. The woman, too, wore a crown. It wasn't a tacky, enormous thing, but rather a slender peak with a blue gem embedded in the center, the only jewel in the statue. Her hair, long and wavy, spilled around her head and tumbled over the side of the lid, so lifelike that Selena could have sworn it was real. The moonlight fell upon her face, and Selena's hand trembled as she reached out and touched the smooth, youthful cheek. It was cold and hard, as a statue should be. "Which queen were you?" she said aloud, her voice reverberating through the still chamber. She ran a hand across the lips, then across the brow. Her eyes narrowed. A mark was faintly carved into the surface, practically invisible to the eye. She traced it with her finger, then traced it again. Deciding that the moonlight must be bleaching it, Selena shielded the spot with her hand. A diamond, two arrows piercing its side, then a vertical line through its middle. It was the word mark she'd seen earlier. She stepped back from the sarcophagi, suddenly cold. This was a forbidden place. She tripped on something, and as she staggered, she noticed the floor. Her mouth fell open. It was covered in stars, raised carvings that mirrored the night sky, and the ceiling depicted the earth. Why were they reversed? She looked at the walls and put a hand to her heart. Countless word marks were etched into its surface. They were in swirls and whorls, in lines and squares. The small word marks made up larger ones, and the larger ones made up even larger ones, until it seemed the entire room meant something she couldn't possibly understand. Selena looked at the stone coffins. There was something written at the feet of the queen. Selena inched toward the female figure. There, in stone letters, it read, "Ah, Time's Rift." It made little sense. They must be important rulers, and immensely old, but... She approached the head again. There was something calming and familiar about the queen's face, something that reminded Selena of the rose smell. But there was still something off about her, something odd. Selena almost cried aloud as she saw them, the pointed, arched ears, the ears of the Fae, the immortal. But no Fae had married into the Havilyard line for 1,000 years, and there had been only one, and she was a half-breed at that. If this were true, if she was Fae or half-Fae, then she was... Selena stumbled back from the woman and slammed into the wall. A coating of dust flew into the air around her. Then this man was Gavin, the first king of Otterlin. And this was Elena, the first princess of Terrasen, Brannan's daughter, and Gavin's wife and queen. Selena's heart pounded so violently that she felt sick, but she couldn't make her feet move. She shouldn't have entered the tomb. She shouldn't have strayed into the sacred places of the dead when she was so stained and tainted by her crimes. Something would come after her, and haunt and torture her for disturbing their peace.
But why was their tomb so neglected? Why had no one been to honor the dead this day? Why were there not flowers at her head? Why was Elena Galathinius Havilliard forgotten? Against the far wall of the chamber sat piles of jewels and weapons. A sword was prominently displayed before a suit of golden armor. She knew that sword. She stepped toward the treasure. It was the legendary sword of Gavin, the sword he had wielded in the fierce wars that had almost ripped apart the continent, the sword that had slain the Dark Lord Erewhon. Even after 1,000 years, it hadn't rusted. Though magic might have vanished, it seemed that the power that had forged the blade lived on.
Damaris, she whispered, naming the blade.
You know your history, said a light female voice, and Selena jumped, yelping as she tripped over a spear and fell into a gold-filled chest.
The voice laughed. Selena grappled for a dagger, a candlestick, anything. But then she saw the owner of the voice, and froze. She was beautiful beyond reckoning. Her silver hair flowed around her youthful face like a river of moonlight. Her eyes were a crystal, sparkling blue, and her skin was white as alabaster, and her ears were ever so slightly pointed.
"Who are you?"
the assassin breathed, knowing the answer but wanting to hear it.
"You know who I am," Elena Havilliard said.
Her likeness had been perfectly rendered on the sarcophagus. Selena didn't move from where she had fallen into the chest, despite her throbbing spine and legs.
"Are you a ghost?"
"Not quite," said Queen Elena, helping Selena rise from the chest.
Her hand was cold but solid.
"I'm not alive, but my spirit doesn't haunt this place."
She flicked her eyes toward the ceiling, and her face became grave.
"I've risked much coming here tonight."
Selena, despite herself, took a step away. "Risked?"
"I cannot stay here long, and neither can you," said the queen.
What sort of absurd dream was this?
"They are distracted for now, but..."
Elena Havilliard looked at her husband's sarcophagus. Selena's head ached. Was Gavin Havilliard distracting something above? Who needs distracting?
"The 8 guardians. You know of whom I speak."
Selena stared at her blankly, but then understood. "The gargoyles on the clock tower?" The queen nodded.
"They guard the portal between our worlds. We have managed to buy some time, and I was able to slip past."
She grasped Selena's arms. To her surprise, it hurt.
"You must listen to what I tell you. Nothing is a coincidence. Everything has a purpose. You were meant to come to this castle, just as you were meant to be an assassin, to learn the skills necessary for survival."
The nausea returned. She hoped Elena wouldn't speak of what her heart refused to remember, hoped that the queen wouldn't mention what she had spent so long forgetting.
"Something evil dwells in this castle, something wicked enough to make the stars quake. Its malice echoes into all worlds."
The queen went on.
"You must stop it. Forget your friendships. Forget your debts and oaths. Destroy it before it is too late, before a portal is ripped open so wide that there can be no undoing it."
Her head whipped around, as if she heard something.
"Oh, there is no time," she said,
the whites of her eyes showing.
"You must win this competition and become the king's champion. You understand the people's plight. Aurelia needs you as the king's champion."
"But what is..." The queen reached into her pockets.
"They must not catch you here. If they do, all will be lost. Wear this."
She pushed something cold and metallic into Selena's hand.
"It will protect you from harm."
She yanked Selena to the door.
"You were led here tonight, but not by me. I was led here too. Someone wants you to learn. Someone wants you to see..."
Her head snapped to the side as a growl rippled through the air.
"They are coming," she whispered.
"But I don't understand. I'm not who you think I am." Queen Elena put her hands on Selena's shoulders and kissed her forehead.
"Courage of the heart is very rare," she said with sudden calm. "Let it guide you."
A distinct howl shook the walls and made Selena's blood icy.
"Go," said the queen, shoving Selena into the hallway. "Run!"
Needing no more encouragement, Selena staggered up the stairs. She fled so fast that she had little idea of where she was going. There was a scream below, and snarling, and Selena's stomach rose in her throat as she hurled herself upward. The light of her chambers appeared, and as it neared, she heard a faint voice cry from behind her, almost in sudden realization and anger. Selena hurtled into the room and saw only her bed before everything went dark. Selena's eyes opened. She was breathing, hard, and still wearing her gown, but she was safe. Safe in her room. Why was she so prone to strange, unpleasant dreams? And why was she out of breath? Find and destroy the evil lurking in the castle, indeed. Selena turned on her side, and would have gladly fallen asleep again were it not for the metal that cut into her palm.
Please tell me this is Kaol's ring.
But she knew it wasn't. In her hand lay a coin-sized gold amulet on a delicate chain. She fought against the urge to scream. Made of intricate bands of metal, within the round border of the amulet lay two overlapping circles, one on top of the other. In the space that they shared was a small blue gem that gave the center of the amulet the appearance of an eye. A line ran straight through the entire thing. It was beautiful and strange and... Selena faced the tapestry. The door was slightly ajar. She jumped from the bed, slamming into the wall so hard that her shoulder made an ugly cracking noise. Despite the pain, she rushed to the door and pulled it tightly shut. The last thing she needed was for whatever was down there to wind up in her rooms, or to have Elena show up again. Panting, Selena stepped back, surveying the tapestry. The woman's figure rose up from behind the wooden chest. With a jolt, she realized it was Elena. She stood just where the door was. A clever marker. Selena threw more logs onto the fire, quickly changed into her nightgown, and slid into bed, clutching her makeshift knife. The amulet lay where she had left it.
"It will protect you."
Selena glanced at the door again. No screams, no howls, nothing to indicate what had just happened. Still. Selena cursed herself for it, but hastily attached the chain around her neck. It was light and warm. Pulling the covers up to her chin, she squeezed her eyes shut, waiting for sleep to come, or for a clawed hand to snatch at her, to decapitate her. If it hadn't been a dream, if it hadn't just been some hallucination. Selena clutched the necklace. Become the king's champion. She could do that. She was going to do that anyway. But what were Elena's motives? Aurelia needed the king's champion to be someone who understood the suffering of the masses. That seemed simple enough. But why did Elena have to be the one to tell her that? And how did it tie to her first command, to find and destroy the evil lurking in the castle? Selena took a steadying breath, nestling farther into her pillows. What a fool she was for opening the secret door on Sam Hewen! Had she somehow brought all of this upon herself, then? She opened her eyes, watching the tapestry.
Something evil dwells in this castle. Destroy it.
Didn't she have enough to worry about right now? She was going to fulfill Elena's second command, but the first, that might lead her into trouble. It wasn't like she could go poking about the castle whenever and wherever she pleased, either. But if there was a threat like that, then not only her life was at risk. And while she'd be more than happy if some dark force somehow destroyed Kane, Parrington, the King, and Caltaine Rompier, if Nehemia, or even Kaol and Dorian,
were somehow harmed. Selena took a shuddering breath. The least she could do was look in the tomb for some clues. Maybe she'd find out something regarding Elena's purpose. And if that didn't yield anything, well, at least she'd tried. The phantom breeze flowed through her room, smelling of roses. It was a long while before Selena slipped into an uneasy sleep. Chapter 26. The doors to her bedroom banged open, and Selena was on her feet in an instant, a candlestick in hand. But Kaol took no notice of her as he stormed in, his jaw clenched. She groaned and slumped back onto her bed.
"Don't you ever sleep?" she grumbled, pulling the covers over herself. "Weren't you celebrating into the wee hours of the morning?"
He put a hand on his sword as he ripped back the blankets and dragged her out of bed by the elbow.
"Where were you last night?"
She pushed away the fear that tightened her throat. There was no way he could know about the passages. She smiled at him.
"Here, of course. Didn't you visit to give me this?"
She yanked her elbow out of his grasp and waved her fingers in front of him, displaying the amethyst ring.
"That was for a few minutes. What about the rest of the night?"
She refused to step back as he studied her face, then her hands, then the rest of her.
As he did so, she returned the favor.
His black tunic was unbuttoned at the top and slightly wrinkled, and his short hair needed a combing. Whatever this was, he was in a rush.
"What's all the fuss about? Don't we have a test this morning?"
She picked at her nails as she waited for an answer.
"It's been canceled. A champion was found dead this morning. Xavier, the thief from Melisande."
She flicked her eyes to him, then back to her nails. "And I suppose you think I did it?"
"I'm hoping you didn't, as the body was half-eaten."
"Eaten?"
She crinkled her nose. She sat cross-legged on the bed, propping herself on her hands.
"How gruesome. Perhaps Cain did it. He's beastly enough to do such a thing."
Her stomach felt tight. Another champion murdered. Did it have to do with whatever evil Elena had mentioned? The Eye-Eater and the other two champions' killings hadn't been just a fluke or a drunken brawl, as the investigation had determined. No. This was a pattern. Kaol sighed through his nose.
"I'm glad you find humor in a man's murder."
She made herself grin at him.
"Cain is the most likely candidate. You're from Aniel. You should know more than anyone how they are in the White Fang Mountains."
He ran a hand through his short hair.
"You should mind who you accuse. While Cain is a brute, he's Duke Parrington's champion."
"And I'm the Crown Prince's champion."
She flipped her hair over a shoulder.
"I should think that means I can accuse whomever I please."
"Just tell me plainly, where were you last night?"
She straightened, staring into his golden brown eyes.
"As my guards can attest, I was here the entire night. Though if the king wants me questioned, I can always tell him that you can vouch for me, too."
Kaol glanced at her ring, and she hid her smile as a faint line of color crept into his cheeks. He said,
"I'm sure you'll be even more pleased to hear that you and I won't be having a lesson today."
She grinned at that, and sighed dramatically as she slid back under the blankets and nestled into her pillows.
"Immensely pleased."
She pulled the blankets up to her chin and batted her eyelashes at him. "Now get out. I'm going to celebrate by sleeping for another 5 hours. A lie, but he bought it. She closed her eyes before she could see the glare he gave her, and smiled to herself when she heard him stalk out of the room. It was only when she heard him slam the doors to her room that she sat up.
The champion had been eaten?
Last night in her dream.
No. It hadn't been a dream.
It had been real. And there had been those screeching creatures.
Had Xavier been killed by one of them? But they'd been in the tomb. There was no way they could have been in the castle halls without someone noticing. Some vermin probably got to the body before it was found. Very, very hungry vermin.
She shuddered again and leapt out from under the blankets. She needed a few more makeshift weapons and a way to fortify the locks on her windows and doors. Even as she readied her defenses, she kept assuring herself that it was nothing to worry about at all. But with a few hours of freedom ahead of her, she brought as many of them with her as possible as she locked the door to her bedroom and slipped into the tomb. Selena paced the length of the tomb, snarling to herself. There was nothing here that explained Elena's motives, or what the source of this mysterious evil might be. Absolutely nothing. In the daytime, a ray of sunlight shone into the tomb, making all the dust motes she stirred up swirl like falling snow. How was it possible that there was light so far beneath the castle? Selena paused beneath the grate in the ceiling, peering up at the light flowing through it. Sure enough, the sides of the shaft shimmered. They were lined with polished gold. A lot of gold if it meant reflecting the sun's rays all the way down here. Selena stalked between the two sarcophagi. Though she'd brought three of her makeshift weapons, she'd found no trace of whatever had been growling and screeching last night. And no trace of Elena, either. Selena paused beside Elena's sarcophagus. The blue gem embedded in her stone crown pulsed in the faint sunlight. "What was your purpose in telling me to do those things?" she mused aloud, her voice echoing off of the intricately carved walls. "You've been dead for 1,000 years. Why still bother with Aurelia?" "And why not get Dorian or Kaol or Nehemia or someone else to do it?" Selena wrapped a finger on the queen's pert nose. "One would think you'd have better things to do with your afterlife." Though she tried to grin, her voice came out quieter than she would have liked. She should go. Even with her bedroom door locked, someone was bound to come looking for her sooner or later, and she highly doubted that anyone would believe her if she told them that she'd been charged with a very important mission by the First Queen of Otterlin. In fact, she realized with a grimace, she'd be lucky if she weren't accused of treason and magic using. It would certainly guarantee her return to Endovir. After a final sweep of the tomb, Selena left. There was nothing useful here, and besides, if Elena wanted her to be the king's champion so badly, then she couldn't spend all her time hunting down whatever this evil was. It would probably hurt her chances of winning, actually. Selena hurried up the steps, her torch casting odd shadows on the walls. If this evil was as threatening as Elena made it seem, then how could she possibly defeat it? Not that the thought of something wicked dwelling in the castle scared her or anything. No, it wasn't that at all. Selena huffed. She'd focus on becoming King's champion. And then, if she won, she'd go about finding this evil. Maybe. An hour later, flanked by guards, Selena held her chin high as they strode through the halls toward the library. She smiled at the young chevaliers they passed, and smirked at the courtwomen who eyed her pink and white gown. She couldn't blame them. The dress was spectacular, and she was spectacular in it. Even Ress, one of the handsomer guards posted outside her rooms, had said so. Naturally, it hadn't been too difficult to convince him to escort her to the library. Selena smiled smugly to herself as she nodded to a passing nobleman, who raised his eyebrows at the sight of her. He was immensely pale, she noticed as he opened his mouth to say something, but Selena continued down the hall. Her steps quickened at the rumblings of arguing male voices that echoed off the stones as they neared a bend. Hurrying farther, Selena ignored the click of Ress's tongue as she rounded the corner. She knew that smell all too well, the tang of blood and the stinging reek of decomposing flesh. But she hadn't expected the sight of it. Half-eaten was a pleasant way to describe what was left of Xavier's rail-thin body. One of her escorts cursed under his breath, and Ress stepped closer to her, a light hand on her back, encouraging her to keep walking. None of the gathered men looked at her as she passed, skirting the edge of the scene and getting a better look at the body in the process. Xavier's chest cavity had been split open and his vital organs removed.
Unless someone had moved them upon finding the body, there was no trace of them. And his long face, stripped of its flesh, was still contorted in a silent scream. This was no accidental killing. There was a hole in the crown of Xavier's head, and she could see that his brain was gone, too. The smears of blood on the wall looked like someone had been writing and then rubbed it away. But even now, some of the writing remained, and she tried not to gape at it. Word marks. 3 word marks, forming an arcing line that had to have once been a circle near the body.
"Holy gods,"
one of her guards muttered as they left behind the throng at the crime scene. No wonder Kaol had looked so disheveled this morning. She straightened. He'd thought she did this? Fool. If she wanted to knock off her competitors one by one, she'd do it quick and clean. A slit throat, a knife in the heart, a poisoned glass of wine. This was just plain tasteless. And strange. The word marks made this something more than a brutal killing. Ritualistic, perhaps. Someone approached from the opposite direction. It was Grave, the vicious assassin, staring at the body from a distance. His eyes, dark and still like a forest pool, met hers. She ignored his rotting teeth as she jerked her chin toward the remnants of Xavier. "Too bad," she said, deliberately not sounding very sorry at all. Grave chuckled, sticking his gnarled fingers into the pockets of his worn and dirty pants. Didn't his sponsor bother to properly clothe him? Obviously not, if his sponsor was nasty and foolish enough to pick him as a champion.
"Such a pity," Grave said, shrugging as she passed by him.
She nodded tersely, and despite herself, she kept her mouth shut as she continued down the hall. There were only 16 of them left now. 16 champions, and 4 of them were to duel. The competition was getting steeper. She should thank whatever grim god had decided to end Xavier's life. But for some reason, she couldn't. Dorian swung his sword, grunting as Kaol easily deflected the blow and parried. His muscles were sore from weeks of not practicing, and his breath was ragged in his throat as he thrust and thrust again.
"This is what comes from such idle behavior," Kaol chuckled, stepping to the side so that Dorian stumbled forward.
He remembered a time when they'd been of equal skill, though that had been long ago. Dorian, while he still enjoyed swordplay, had grown to prefer books.
"I've had meetings, and important things to read," Dorian said, panting. He lunged.
Kaol deflected, feigned, then thrust so hard that Dorian stepped back. His temper rose.
"Meetings which you used as an excuse to start arguing with Duke Parrington."
Dorian made a wide sweep of his sword, and Kaol took up the defensive.
"Or maybe you're just too busy visiting Sardothian's rooms in the middle of the night."
Sweat dripped from Kaol's brow.
"How long has that been going on?"
Dorian growled as Kaol switched to the offensive and conceded step after step, his thighs aching.
"It's not what you think," he said through his teeth. "I don't spend my nights with her. Aside from last night, I've only visited her once, and she was less than warm, don't worry. At least one of you has some common sense."
Kaol delivered each blow with such precision that Dorian had to admire him.
"Because you've clearly lost your mind."
"And what about you?" Dorian demanded. "Do you want me to comment on how you showed up in her rooms last night? The same night another champion died?" Dorian fainted, but Kaol didn't fall for it. Instead, he struck strongly enough that Dorian staggered back a step, fighting to keep his footing. Dorian grimaced at the rage flickering in Kaol's eyes. "Fine, that was a cheap shot," he admitted, bringing his sword up to deflect another blow. "But I still want an answer."
"Maybe I don't have one. Like you said, it's not what you think."
Kaol's brown eyes gleamed, but before Dorian could debate it, his friend switched the subject with brutal aim.
"How's court?"
Kaol asked, breathing hard. Dorian winced. That was why he was here. If he had to spend another moment sitting in his mother's court, he'd go mad.
that terrible.
Shut up, Dorian snarled, and slammed his sword into Kaol's.
It must be exceptionally awful to be you today. I bet all the ladies were begging you to protect them from the murderer inside our walls.
Kaol grinned, but it didn't reach his eyes. Taking the time to spar with him when there was a fresh corpse in the castle was a sacrifice Dorian was surprised Kaol had been willing to make. Dorian knew how much his position meant to him. Dorian stopped suddenly and straightened. Kaol should be doing more important things right now.
Enough, he said, sheathing his rapier.
Not missing a step, Kaol did the same. They walked from the sparring room in silence.
Any word from your father?
Kaol asked in a voice that indicated he knew something was amiss.
I wonder where he went off to.
Dorian let out a long breath, calming his panting.
No, I haven't the slightest idea. I remember him leaving like this when we were children, but it hasn't happened for some years now. I bet he's doing something particularly nasty.
Be careful what you say, Dorian.
Or what, you'll throw me in the dungeons? He didn't mean to snap, but he'd barely gotten any sleep the night before, and this champion winding up dead did nothing to improve his mood. When Kaol didn't bother retorting, Dorian asked,
Do you think someone wants to kill all the champions?
Perhaps. I can understand wanting to kill the competition, but to do it so viciously. I hope it's not a pattern.
Dorian's blood went a bit cold.
You think they'll try to kill Selena? I added some extra guards around her rooms.
To protect her or to keep her in? They stopped at the hallway crossroads where they would part ways to their separate rooms.
What difference does it make?
Kaol said quietly.
You don't seem to care either way. You'll visit her no matter what I say, and the guards won't stop you because you're the prince.
There was something so defeated, so bitter underlying the captain's words, that Dorian, for a heartbeat, felt badly. He should stay away from Selena. Kaol had enough to worry about. But then he thought of the list his mother made and realized he had enough, too.
I need to inspect Xavier's body again. I'll see you in the hall for dinner tonight,
was all Kaol said before he headed to his rooms. Dorian watched him go. The walk back to his tower felt surprisingly long. He opened the wooden door to his rooms, peeling off his clothing as he headed to the bathing room. He had the entire tower to himself, though his chambers occupied only the upper level. They provided a haven from everyone. But today, they just felt empty.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook, so please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.